Well, what's up, everybody? We are back. The first Cat Basket podcast of the 2009 Pitt football season. This is DPJ here alongside Jason Jones.
What's going on, everybody?
We are here fresh off of a 35-3 win against the Youngstown State Panthers. Or, sorry, 38-3.
35-3 is what I guessed on the website. It was almost exactly right.
3 points off.
It was 3 points off, man.
Terrible.
A field goal I didn't expect it. I didn't bring that into my sort of metric for guessing games.
You're also close about having a rusher over 100 yards.
Yeah, I thought it was gonna be Graham, but Lewis looked pretty good in terms of just like he hit the holes. You can't really look at a running performance against a FCS team as like as a sort of signal if he's gonna be great this year, because those guys are so slow in comparison. But he turned up a couple plays, got a couple of huge gains, which is, all we can ask for from sort of running back tandem we're going to have this year, for the most year. It seems like it's not going to be a tandem, though. It seems like it's going to be Lewis getting the lion's share of the carries, and then Graham coming off the bench and maybe spelling him for, like, 7 or 8 carries.
Right. That's one thing I was a little surprised with, was I thought that, we'd see a little bit more of a committee at first. But
The way the coaching staff talked about the sort of, like, the way that it was played out in camp was that it was going to be almost a 50-50 thing, with Deion being the obvious starter and then Graham probably getting, majority of carries. But if we're going to run the ball as much as we did yesterday, I think we're going to have to start giving Graham more carries. Because if we're going to run, 30, 40 times, we're going to have to...
Lewis is going to break down a season, not that big
small,
of a guy.
He's a small guy. You can only put so much carries on him. And once he starts getting, playing Division I teams and getting beat up by actual defenses, it's going to be a problem if he keeps getting 26 carries a game. Because, remember, we only gave Shady, 22 to 25 carries a game last year. I don't think that's going to be really what's going to happen over the season. I think it's definitely going to be closer to, Graham and Lewis having sharing carries, maybe.
Yep. That's one nice thing, though, is we have plenty of depth at running back.
Yeah, we do.
A lot of guys that can come in.
Even if we needed him, Sharif Harris could even come in, play a little bit. Burns can play. Burns is obviously going to play a little bit. I think what we're gonna have to look for sort of next week is gonna be, what does Lewis look like against legitimate sort of speed on the outside? Because he was kind of beating those guys with foot speed for a guy who's probably not gonna be fast enough to beat guys with foot speed in the big game. You know what I mean? Like when we play like a good defense like South Florida or something, he's probably not gonna be able to use his foot speed as much. He's got to be more. Maybe he's got to be more elusive.
Yep. And next week should be a good test. Buffalo next week, next Saturday, and they had an impressive win yesterday against UTEP.
Yeah.
At UTEP.
Yeah, they put it on them. You thought, we all read that, like, they lost one of their best players, but there's not to say they can't come in. And, we can't go in there and cause a ton of problems because it's going to be an away game. It's early. Still a lot of question marks. It's going to be a case of, like, can we go out there and put in the same sort of, like, performance? Because I thought we got off to, like, a slow start today. Slow start yesterday. Stall didn't look great. And is that going to become sort of like the way the games are going to go?
Right.
Hopefully we get it into gear.
This is a year where we can't afford to be having slow starts, because we don't have that closing speed with a guy like Shady to, really just turn it on at the end of the game.
We don't have, points. We don't have, like, a guy who can put up points by himself. Maybe Baldwin would be that guy, we don't have that sort of game breaker that we had with Shady. Sort of, we have some good backs who could be a lot better than good, depending on how their college career plays out. But
yeah, that's why I think, being consistent from start to finish is a big thing. And people say take things game by game.
No.
That's crucial for us.
Yeah, we can't come out and throw a bad performance out next week. We got to put everything's got to go into. It's going to have to build on itself. Like, by the time we get to NC State week 4, we're going to have to be kind of rolling. As we saw yesterday, Navy's not a pushover. So that game, everybody thinks it's not going to be a pushover. They're never, last year they weren't so good, but they look a lot better this year. So we're going to have to win.
Remember, they lost their quarterback last year, too.
Yeah, we're going to have to, that's not a gimme game by any stretch of the imagination. So by week 4, we're going to have two tests, two sort of, mid-level tests. Nothing huge, but NC State, and then NC State's, we all watched them on, I watched them on Thursday, like, they didn't look good at all. Their offense looks slow. That quarterback they have looked really bad. I mean, we don't have an SEC defense. We have a pretty good defense, consider all things considered. So I think we can give them the same problem. I mean, we can give them the same sort of game that South Carolina gave, because our offense is better than South Carolina's, but depends on what it looks like. You know what I mean? In a situation against the NC State, where they're going to be able to sort of dial it up more on us, whereas right. Youngstown State kind of just stood there and let us, you know, basically watch us play them.
And against Buffalo next week, I think it's going to be a little bit better too, because it's probably going to be a sellout. It's going to be a big game for them, as you know,
yeah.
For them, Pitt coming in is kind of a, you know, a big school.
Yeah,
big,
oh yeah, yeah. BCS for a MAC team, yeah, it's, yeah.
And you know, one thing that we didn't see this week that we'll probably see next week is expanding the playbook a little
yeah.
bit. Even once that said in the post game presser yesterday,
yeah, I don't
ran
think
four different plays on rushing.
Yeah, I don't feel like that's what the final offense is going to look like at all. I think we did a lot of stuff. We just kept it super, super conservative. We didn't pass as much as we're going to pass this year. There's no way we're going to throw, you know, have our starter throw 16 passes. No way.
Combined 24 for the game.
Yeah, combined 24 game. Because we shut it down so quick once we got up on them, you know. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that stuff like we saw to Dickerson, like, you know, get him out on the corners, get him out on the edges, try to get him the ball in space. Which is good, because he looks like he can actually make plays out there, and you know, he's too big for he's too big for a safety to sort of cover, and he's too fast for a linebacker. You kind of hope that he'll be able to get preferable matchups
right.
for him
somewhere in the mix. He can fit
yeah.
right in.
I noticed we did a lot of like one back stuff yesterday with bringing in two tight ends, which I kind of like. Which is like, it's probably the way to go if you have Byam and Dickerson. It's probably a good idea to have them both out there as much mm-hmm. as you can.
Yeah, that's kind of weird seeing just kind of like a little, you know, modern offense kick to our offense, whereas, you know, before it was always power eye every time.
You can tell the formations are different, like a little different too. Like, Sunday's bringing in a little more sort of.
Right. Yeah, it was just weird
a lot
seeing
more motion and everything.
More motions, a lot of two tight end sets.
A lot of shifts too, like a lot of like coming to line and then shift, which is always good. But I think like, I think what the real test is going to be is what we do next week and how we open it up. Like, if we're gonna do what we usually do and kind of slog through those away games.
Run,
but if
run,
you
run,
remember,
run past when you have
yeah,
to.
If you remember, we always play better on the road for some reason under Wani. Like, we're not a good home team, and we could probably come out and give a good performance against. I mean, I'm not gonna throw out a guess yet, you know, since the first game just happened, but I could see us putting some points on Buffalo, you know, putting some points on them, and then making it sort of out of reach real quick.
Right. As long as we, you know, 14-point lead, double-digit lead at that
yeah.
point, just kind of run the ball and just choke.
So you
want to
just talk about like some specifics from the game? I thought defensively we looked great. I thought we looked really good. I thought Gunn looked fantastic.
Yeah, I was very, very impressed with
fantastic.
Him. He
looked like a completely different player.
That middle linebacker spot might just be the place for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, he looked like a completely different player out there than he did when he played outside linebacker 2 years ago.
Yep, he was staying on assignments. He was finding the ball. He was, you know, he showed some good closing speed.
Yeah, that's what really surprised me when he got that sack, when he just closed on that guy from nowhere. And you're right. He's doing stuff they really didn't do as an outside linebacker. He's not making like he's not getting pushed out of plays when teams are running sort of, you know, plays where they got to seal up the edge and stuff. Like, he's kind of staying in there. And I thought he was really the linchpin for the whole defense's success yesterday, is that he was everywhere. I mean, he didn't play like McKillop played, but he played like a different style of middle linebacker. He like used a lot more, he sort of closed on the ball a lot more than McKillop. When McKillop just stuffed people,
right,
you know, in the holes, he sort of closed and found the guy better.
Well, they're kind of different players.
Yeah,
they have different roles.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, yeah. And I thought defensive line, you know, was as advertised. But again, talking about
they were pulling a lot of guys early too. I mean, Chaz Alexi was in there early. Nate
yeah.
Nix was in there early.
Well, I don't think they wanted to. I don't think they wanted to aggravate, because you know, Sheard had that knee injury, so they didn't
right.
want to. They didn't want to mess with him. I'm shocked he even played. I thought they were going to sit him, because like I thought him and Byam were going to get, you know,
mm-hmm.
rested. But you know, Romeus looked great. He looked great in both parts of the game. He looked great in the running game. But again, you know, they're playing pylons pretty much. Those FCS offenses aren't, I mean, offensive lines aren't good enough to hold up to legitimate athletes like we have.
McLean's eating up blocks in the middle
yeah,
pretty well too.
I thought Max Gruder played really well.
Yeah,
at the one outside linebacker.
Impressive game for Max.
Really good. Yeah, he's the type of player we need out there. Like him and Greg Williams. Greg Williams and Adam Gunn could be a pretty solid linebacker unit. I had some questions about how, if he was going to be able to handle the, you know, the sort of like. The stuff, the weird stuff we do on defense, like the covering receivers as an outside linebacker, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of stuff. But he looked good. And, you know, just hope that he can show the same sort of speed that he had today against actual other guys with speed. Right. It's not like just you played an FCS team, so everybody looked fast. But the corners looked really good.
Didn't really know so much, and that's a good thing.
It's always a good thing.
I would say that the way they have Aaron Berry positioning himself this year is so much better than last year. You know,
he's turning on the ball more.
Turn on the ball, but lined up directly over the receiver, so the receiver can't make one of those cut routes.
He's such a fast guy. You gotta give him a situation where he can kind of use that speed to play people out there. And you know, with Chappelle, you know what you're gonna get. Like, guy's gonna make tackles, and you know, still gonna have all still the same sort of player.
He'll be an average corner.
What'd you think of Taglianetti at safety?
I thought he was okay. I really didn't notice him much, but I was paying more attention to trying to see what they were going to do with him and Fields. And really, Fields didn't get to play too much until the game was getting out of reach. Which
you can
was
tell
surprising.
There's two position battles you can tell that weren't like splitting time. It's the left guard spot and the safety spot. Taglianetti's the starter and Thomas the starter. There's no rotation. Again, thing me and you always complain about, but it's the way it is. He's not much. He doesn't. Why he doesn't rotate people in like that? It's just not something he does. He says he does it. He says he's going to do it, but it just doesn't happen.
He does it, but he does it weird things. Like whenever with the receivers today, you know, he had listed Jonathan Baldwin as a starter, and then listed Seth Magino, Derek Turner as for starter, and. But there were points in the game where they were just rotating all three. Like they would take Baldwin out for a couple of plays, and then have.
We should never take Baldwin off the field. Unless it's like a goal line situation or something, where
I would love to keep him in for a goal line. You always have to keep that corner on it so he doesn't rush up. Because
we got because there's no reason for him to be off the field because he's head to shoulders above the rest of our receivers, and just having him out there, he gets one catch and breaks a tackle. It's a touchdown.
He's a guy that really needs to be accounted for.
Yes,
you might be able to slip by, not really making sure where Derek Turner is, but with Jonathan Baldwin, you always need to make sure that the corner knows where he's at and the safety's always ready to roll over in case that corner gets beat.
I wonder if we're going to see more stuff to him next week, sort of. Maybe like a, maybe more sort of different style of like route and everything. Like
wrist. Maybe. That one catch he had from Tino was pretty nice. We had to make that nice adjustment on the ball. And it was a little bit underthrown, but he turned around and got it. You know, that's a play that not many of the receivers would make.
Our problem with Baldwin becomes, can we get him the ball in sort of a situation that's going to be good for him? This guy likes to use a lot of deep routes. We don't have a quarterback that can throw a deep route. You kind of have to, figure out. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing Baldwin get nice over-the-middle stuff, like right in the middle of the field, like 5-yard, bam, because that's the only kind of passes we can throw.
But that might not be his role, So I think Seth McGee makes a much better slot receiver than Jonathan Baldwin.
Yeah, I mean, you make.
You don't want to limit what Baldwin does, but at the same time, you want to play to your strengths. And his is burning down the field.
Got to get him the ball, though. We got to give him the ball.
Right. Well, let me ask you a question on this. For our screens that we're finally throwing correctly now by hitting it to the outside receiver so the inside receiver can throw a block, do you like it better going to Baldwin, or would you prefer to go to an Andre or Cam Sadler type?
If Cam Sadler can do what he did yesterday, I'd throw it to Cam Sadler because he can come off that block better because there's not as much for him to hit. Like that screen pass he ran was like perfect. It was perfect. Like he broke a tackle and got the extra yardage, and he looks like great kick returner. He's in a house like two or three over the course of the next couple of years. Yeah, I mean, if you throw that, you can throw a play to Baldwin, though, because Baldwin can take sort of like a hit and then move. Right. He's got the big body. But all I ask for is if you're going to throw that route, throw it so the guy can get a block. Don't throw it to the boundary and then have the guy not be able to move. That's all I ask. If you're going to run those plays, do not run them so that like it's impossible for us to get yardage. Mm-hmm. Just run them so that we can at least have a chance. I mean, you kind of have to understand, like, that's what the offense is, like plays like that. And then you can't be looking for any sort of, we don't do exotic things with a lot of screen passes. I got a feeling we're going to
maybe. Norman says we did. Whether or not we use them, different story.
I don't think we'll see much of anything like that this year. I think we're going to see a lot of conservative offense. A lot.
As long as if we do it, it has to be for the right reasons. Don't just do it to do it. If you're up late in the game, just run the ball. Don't try some stuff that could cost us a turnover or anything.
What'd you think of Stahl's performance yesterday?
I thought he looked like the Bill Stahl we all expected him to be. He had a couple nice completions. The two touchdown passes he threw, people might say, oh, he had two touchdown passes. They're kind of screenplays that, yeah, you know, the receivers made more of the play. I will say on the Dickerson touchdown, though, Stahl did do a good job.
Yeah, that was
his
really
first
nice.
Two receivers were covered.
Yeah,
he looked really over nice the entire pass. Field and then found Dickerson wide on the flank to hit him, and Dickerson to the work got into the touchdown. The thing that got me, though, was everybody's talking about the boos and things like that. I didn't think, you know, I heard a couple people, but I didn't think it was as bad as people were making out to be. I think just with all the negativity came out with camp, people were hypersensitive to the boos. You know?
Plus, I mean, we're, you know, the pit crowds, they do like a nice boo. And Stahl sort of used up all his goodwill. Like, all this goodwill was used up last year with, you know, some of his performances. And I mean, we weren't anywhere near the student section, so we didn't hear, you know, we couldn't really hear them from where we were at. So I didn't feel like there was that many boos. Like, I felt like it was like, yeah, he got booed really bad after his interception, but come on, that was a ridiculous interception.
That pass was bad, and the other time he got booed was on that screen pass that he threw into like three defenders where it was almost picked off. Luckily, it was low enough that it wasn't. That was just an atrocious. That was either on the first or second series, and I think it was the second series.
People, that's what worries me about the screen pass sort of offense. He does not throw the ball on screens very well. He'll float it or he'll put it like into, like, you know, into people. Like, he doesn't get enough. He doesn't get. They're not crisp. Like, his passes aren't crisp on screens.
You need a good zip.
Yeah.
In the numbers, because you can't, if the ball's at the knee or a little bit high and the receiver has to jump, that really is cutting down time that the receiver needs to make a play as soon as he catches it.
And then, I thought Tino came in and played perfectly fine. Like, he played pretty well for.
The biggest thing that stood out to me, Tino versus Stahl, every time pressure got around Bill, he just broke down like he always did, you know. But Tino handled it well. On that one play where he threw the deep ball to Baldwin, there were maybe four guys coming right at him, and they got through our line. He saw him coming. He got that ball off. It got where it needed to be. He stood in there and didn't back down. That's not what you need for recording.
He's not jumpy in the pocket like Stahl is. Stahl's, like, really, really jumpy. And then once Stahl gets hit, it just starts going downhill. Like, if everything goes perfectly well and he comes out and, like, is not touched, he's okay. But, like, the second he starts feeling it coming, he sort of shuts it down, and then he becomes that quarterback where he's looking around all the time and trying to, you know. He's not comfortable taking the hits, you know, that you should have to take to be a starting quarterback. Whereas it looked like Sinceri wasn't bothered by it at all. He just took it and got, you know, just threw the ball. So what, you know, we probably won't see Tino again.
Well, you might. I mean, I don't think he would have gotten in if the game was a little bit closer as it was. The fact they put him in when they did really surprised me. It was pretty much almost the entire second half, the way, you know, Wani was talking about in the press conference. But it was, I thought, you know, when that happened, I had a feeling we were going to see Bill Stahl again. I just felt like it was, pretty surprising to hear we're going to give Tino some snaps, and Tino actually got some snaps.
That's something you don't expect. You kind of look at it like, you know, we'll see.
I was expecting to hear that we were looking for a situation to get him in, but we didn't have it.
Yeah, obviously. That's what usually happens, but I think when the games start being, you know, regular.
Oh, as the game gets closer and they get a little bit more intense, you're not playing Youngstown State
at all. We're not going to see Tino at all. But he definitely has a better arm. You can see that just by the way his passes look. He's got a better arm. He looks like he can move a lot better than Stahl. So,
and we saw that in the high school championships whenever he was able to break off some long runs when plays are breaking down. He has some speed, which is nice to have because, you know,
if there's a way we could run two quarterbacks, but it's not something we do, but it would work, and Tino would probably put up big numbers if you gave Tino the ball, I imagine Tino could have a couple 300-yard games in him, because he throws nicer sort of passes, plus you can kind of get the offense moving a little better.
The problem with that, though, is you're asking the staff to put a little trust in a guy that's just a redshirt freshman.
It's not going to happen. It's not going
to
happen.
Not at that position.
Stahl's their guy. And we're going to see Stahl until he doesn't have any eligibility left, which will be in, you know, January, hopefully, after we win a bowl game. But I thought Deion Lewis, you know, he was like the star of the game, sort of, on offense.
Absolutely. He, you know, got it to the point where Bill Hillgrove mentioned Shady Who at one point. Not really they go there yet against a, you know, FCS team, but still, it's nice to see we have a guy that we know can put up yards. Here's the most impressive thing for me about Deion Lewis. No dance around the backfield. He got the ball.
Yeah.
He ran to where he was supposed to go.
Hole, yeah.
That's I hate that, you know, Barry Sanders dance around in the pocket. Hit the hole. Keep those legs moving.
This didn't remind me of when Shady played against was it Grambling, and he scored those three touchdowns on three plays. Doesn't remind me of that. He doesn't have that sort of like spark, sort of as you see as like Shady had, where you immediately knew like this guy is it. You look at Deion Lewis, you're like, this can be a solid back. He reminds me a lot more of Stephen Towling than he would have Shady. But like I said, man, if he can just keep getting carries, keep doing what he's doing, like, you know what I mean, like hitting the holes, he could have a really productive season. I don't think he's going to put up 1,500 yards or anything, but...
That's not to do, but, you know, he had 129 yards yesterday, three total touchdowns.
Yeah,
that's pretty good for your very first college.
Exactly, game. What a breakout sort of like, you know, sort of like, hey, here I am, sort of number line, like stat line, but...
The one thing I laughed about in the post-game press conference was once that made a big mention of how Deion Lewis was ahead just because he came to campus a year early and got to work with Funny Morris.
Weight room. That's my favorite part of our sort of program right now is the emphasis on the weight room and how like the size jobs and everything.
Work for Adam Gunn. Work for Deion Lewis.
If that's the Adam Gunn we get this year, we'll be fine. If he plays like that all year, we'll be fine. He'll pick up right. Well, he won't be like a level player McKillop was, but he'll be, you know, pretty good. He could be an All Big East player. Plays like he did yesterday.
Yeah,
he'd look. I mean, we look on defense like we have like two or three All Big East guys. Like, I think Aaron Berry is going to be in for a big season.
I hope so.
The way he looks,
we've been waiting on him for a while.
And he's the type of guy. If he puts up a decent season, he can go to the combine and get himself drafted. He's fast and he's, you know, reasonably sized for a corner, so he's not going to have any problems. So there you go. I mean, I think he sees what's on the line. Sort of put this one year in. I mean, he had such inconsistent years in the past two. But if he could just put it in this year, you're looking at a guy who could go anywhere from, you know, he could be like a second round pick with his sort of foot speed.
Yeah. There's always a need for cornerbacks in the NFL
that are that fast. Yeah, the cornerbacks that have like that sort of speed to play the position. And I thought like the other thing I noticed. Going back to the booze, that like the whole like sort of crowd thing. Like I thought the crowd was really small compared to what they said it was going to be. I thought I was expecting like 55,000.
I think that's a combination of a couple things. We talked about this a little bit earlier, just between the two of ourselves. Is the Notre Dame fans buying season tickets because it's cheaper to buy a season ticket of Pitt football to get a Notre Dame ticket than it would be to go on StubHub and buy one ticket, you know.
Yeah.
You get a season ticket for $82 or you go on StubHub and pay $150. Makes sense just to buy that season ticket. Plus, we were playing YSU.
Yeah.
That's, another thing right there. Thirdly, we had a 1 o'clock game that was on TV.
Yeah. People don't want to go.
It's our fans. I think
people
just
don't
saying,
go.
Hey, you know, it's not on TV, it's just Youngstown State. It's at 1 o'clock on a Saturday. We're going to win this game. I'm not worrying about it. So
it was it was such a nice day. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was a good day to watch football. It got hot, but it was, you know, it was nice. It's enjoyable. I mean, I really thought like the atmosphere in terms of just like crowd noise was okay. I mean, it wasn't, you know, but again, I didn't really feel like there was a lot of booze coming on stall until after the, you know, the big mistakes. And You can kind of go two ways. This, you can kind of get all indignant and go like, "Oh, you can't boo a college player. Oh, he's trying his best." You know, or you can go, "Well, he's kind of playing badly." So, to me, there's got to be some middle ground, other than in the argument of it's you can't boo a college player, or you know, boo him after every mistake. It's got to be some sort of middle ground where rational like thought comes in.
If you're throwing a near interception on a screen pass,
you deserve to get booed. It was a bad pass.
You throw a terrible interception over the top when the receiver's over in the city, maybe. You know. However, say you just, you know, throw a regular pass and it's incomplete.
Yeah.
No need for it there.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not saying lay off the guy. And I'm not saying that people were on him. But just, like, this whole story of, like, he's getting booed out of the building all the time, and he's got the hardest job in college football, and it's all BS. He's not getting booed that much. Imagine being like Mitch Mustaine when he played for Arkansas and, like, everybody hated him. It's like he's not playing. Is it like he's like some sort of all Big East performer and we're hating on him? He's probably the worst quarterback in the Big East. I think people are very reasonable with their anger towards him. I think there's a lot of people that just look at it like anybody but him. And I'm not at that point. I mean, I'd much rather have Geno Smith saved, much rather, because you know Stahl's gonna throw a stinker game in there. It's gonna be a big time stinker. It's gonna be like, you know, he'll get like 5 completions and get sacked 6 times and fumble 3 times. You know, he's gonna do stuff like that. But it's like the whole storyline of this being like the hostile territory for Stahl. It's gotta stop. It's in every article I read. It's so much hype and BS. It's like
it's making too much of a contention at this point too, because, you know, the thing is the beat writers every day down at practice, they reported what they saw. It doesn't matter if it was from Panther Lair, if it was from Scout, if it was Gorman, if it was Zeiss.
Yeah, they weren't.
They were reporting the same thing. They were saying Stahl was not playing well. On the days that Stahl played well towards the end of camp, you know what they said? Stahl played much better. They played like the staff wanted him to play. Then when he got on all the message boards, the talk shows, people were picking up on what was being said and just magnifying it based upon the reports that they were reading.
If he gets us to 4-0, if we come out of NC State 4-0, and people are still booing him, then that's a story. But if he goes out and lays a stinker in one of these 3 games coming up, then the story, there's no story there, because he's going to get booed again if he comes out and lays a stinker.
But if it's one of those things, though, if we're winning and he's helping us win, then they're still getting booed. Like you said, that's one thing. But if we're winning and we're 4-0 in spite of him, like, say we get a lead and then maybe later on we throw a couple pick sixes,
like,
or something.
Like the USF game last year.
Right.
We won in spite of him. Like, he played horrible and we still won.
Right. And for people that don't believe that, just watch that first half of the game when he was, you know, falling down on the snaps or
fumbling handoffs. Yeah, he fumbled, like, twice and stuff, yeah.
You know, he had we did have that game-winning drive, but that wasn't, you know.
Oh, that was shady.
A lot of it was shady, but at the same time, that's just one drive for the entire game. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're in a situation with this year. It's like last year we had so many chances to seize the Big East. Like, we could have had the Big East title like twice. And who was the guy who couldn't get us over the hump? The same guy who's playing quarterback now, and the same guy who has sort of a contentious relationship with the fans, with the fan base. You kind of, I mean, if you look at the next home game we play, Navy, like, that's gonna be a legitimate game. We're gonna have probably more fans there because it's a 6 o'clock kickoff. That's gonna be a fun day in the parking lot for 4 hours, 5 hours. But let's talk about this. Me and Dave never had the experience of, like, how normal people watch college football games. Like, you know, get to go out and just hang out and, like, tailgate and stuff. Much easier to take bad play when you drove a couple into you. It's like, it's pretty good times watching, like, you get to walk to your seat, you relax.
All right.
It's very fun.
We're gonna describe what games were pre-2009 for us.
Yeah.
Basically, what we would do is we'd wake up super early after hanging out the night before, partying, if not feeling too well. So we'd wake up, say, around 7 or 8 in the morning, just be dead tired, and then either go to McDonald's in Oakland or to the one on the north side.
North side, that crappy walk up that that little lake.
And it takes 9 million years to get your biscuits in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
So we would get down and then wait outside the gates until 2 hours before kickoff when they would finally open. But while you're waiting there, you're either sitting on a nice concrete ground with the metal bike racks to lean up against, or on one of those crappy plexiglass tables that they have, you know, plastic-type things. Those are uncomfortable. And there's no sun, or there's no shade on that area. So
no,
you're just getting beat down with sun. And it doesn't matter whether it's raining, if it's sunny, if it's cold. We were there every game.
Yeah.
And the worst ones...
4 years together?
Together for 4 years. For me, I did it for 8 years.
Yeah.
And it was awful.
Yeah.
But, like, we always hated the homecoming games because there'd be a bunch of people just running up to get seats to see their friends. awful. So we'd finally have the gates open 2 hours before kickoff, and you had to hope that the person running the security line was cool enough to check you down before they opened the gates, so you could just run right in. Sometimes, you know, you had these people with, oh, I wasn't good enough to get into the police academy, so I have to do Heinz Field security, and they're kind of jerks about it. So you finally get in, then they scan your ticket, or they rip your ticket, which takes forever. They have to check your ID. Then you have to go and get a wristband, if the person puts it on right and doesn't take too long, or doesn't catch a lot of arm hair when you do it.
That's the worst.
Then the fun part comes. You get to run up the ramp against maybe 30 other college kids who you know you're not going for the same seats, but you do it anyway.
Yeah.
You get up to the top. You're a little bit winded. You get to your seat, and you think everything's going okay until you realize we have 2 more hours to wait.
Got the gates yesterday. Got like 30 minutes before the game.
Yeah, nice. we got to the parking lot yesterday around 8:30 and hung out there, and then we left for the stadium around 12:15. We're in our seats a half an hour before kickoff, and it was very enjoyable. Other than Jason ripping his pants in the area.
Yeah, now I have ladies' pit Zubaz pants,
which he'll be wearing to every
game. I wear every game now. I have to, yeah. They're comfortable though, man. They're pajama bottoms or whatever they are. But yeah, I mean, like that whole sort of the side of college football is weird to enjoy. Like, pit games a lot of times for us for like endurance tests, like how much you can take, like how much you can get beat on with sun, and how much, like, you know, sitting around for 3 hours. Like, when you go into the games before the kickoff, like way before the kickoff, there is nothing. It's dudes in like the pants of their jerseys, like throwing the ball.
Listen to their iPods,
yeah. Walking around the field like McKillop used to. It's so boring. It just murders you. And then you have to watch us play. We're not exactly the most exciting college football team in the world. So you have to watch that, and it's like ugh. And you have to take the bus. You take a bus home.
The buses were the worst. If you had to take either the school bus or then walk to Market Square back when it was still shady Market Square. And wait for a bus.
I feel like that would be worse than getting tortured, is that feeling on that bus. Like, it's like, it just, it takes out of you, because it always go like the back way through like a Bloomfield and stuff.
It's crammed on that bus. It's hot. There's, you know, those seats are not designed for adults.
They're designed for little kids because your knees hit the back of the other seat when you sit down.
And then, God forbid, you get one of those seats where the wheel wells come up.
Ugh.
And you have to like sit with your knees up by your chin.
And then you have to like, and the thing is, like, you're not even, like, coming down off being drunk. You're just, like, there. And
you're exhausted.
And then, like, you got people, like, nobody makes any noise on the bus, too, which is always good. Like, there's barely any talking.
Sometimes there is. Sometimes you get on the way down, there's usually a lot more spirit and pep. On the way back, it's usually, like, just dead quiet and some girl talking about John and K plus 8 or something. And, you know, somebody lets out a fart and it stinks up the bus, and it's just awful. Awful. Basically, going home from games is kind of the way going to school was in the morning.
Ugh.
Back in, like, middle
school. It was the worst. It's, like, the worst feeling ever. Being on the bus is the worst.
And
you gotta get up, like, 15 hours too early to go to school. And it's just, like, the whole, like, just sitting around hanging out with people and stuff before the game. Like, I understand why people don't get so mad at losses and stuff. Like,
I thought it was just us.
Yeah, I thought maybe I just had, like, a problem with anger. Which I probably do. But
it wasn't so much the game, it was what we had to endure.
Yeah, to the game, yeah.
Yeah, so
the
now...
The games are fun, I mean you know, even if we play...
As
you know,
boring as the game as that, you know, pretty much was, because it was kind of a blowout early, I still had a blast. I got to, you know, hang out with my buddies, we got to tailgate a bit, we ran into some other zoo people, we actually have a real tailgate crew now, so we got food and drinks and the cat basket flag and everything, and... Sit back, relax, enjoy the day, listen
almost
to the music.
Almost got stung by a bee like 55 times.
That bee sucked. He was going after everybody.
There was like a bee just sitting up at the tailgate just attacking.
It was going after certain people. It was going after you. It was going after some others. But other people were pretty much bee-free.
Yeah. I hate bees.
Like your body spray.
Yeah. Nasty body spray. Yeah, other than that, like... Other than that, really, there's like nothing else for the game. I mean, you know... Thought it was a disappointing crowd in terms of size. It's like, I'm telling you, if we get to like 4-0, if we get 4-0, then you're gonna start seeing a shift in the way this program's thought of. But if we don't get to 4-0, it's gonna be the same old Pitt. Like that NC State game is so winnable.
All these games
are
winnable.
It's so winnable. Yeah, every game our schedule is winnable. The game is so winnable, and it looks like a game that we're going to have a loss before we get there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's like par for the course. Like, when stuff starts rolling downhill for us, we somehow find a way to hit a bump. And the Buffalo game, to me, it seems like the obvious choice for the bump, but I don't see it. And then
I see Navy more.
Now that Navy
went to Ohio State.
Yeah, went to Columbus and, like, didn't even seem to have a problem with Ohio State, sort of, like, sort of extra talent, where they kind of just kept everything close. Navy beat us before. You know, they beat us under Wani before. Wani's not good at defending that triple option. I mean, even last year when we were dominating, we still, like, gave up some huge plays to it.
That's the thing. They're going to have some big plays against you. You just have to contain them.
Yeah.
Don't let them get those big touchdowns like they had against us first time.
Don't let them throw that crazy long touchdown pass they threw against Ohio State.
Yeah. They're not going to run on every single play, so you got to be, you know, accounting for that. You can't have your defensive backs pinch all the way up.
Yeah. We have to figure out a way to... I mean, this like, everything lines up for us this season. Like, next year we're going to have that Utah game. It's going to be a mess if we don't play well. This season is, like, you look at it on paper and you go, like... How's this team not going to have at least 9 wins? And how's this team not going to win the Big East? But...
Vegas picked us at 7 wins as the over-under mark.
Knowing what we know about the way things go for Pitt football, it's too easy. It's like that season... It's like Walt's season in 2003 where everything looked like it was lining up and we lost to Toledo.
Yep.
For some reason, when stuff starts to look too good for Pitt, it just goes right downhill. It just gets sucked in and, like, I got that weird feeling about this season. And I think you're right, man. I think it's going to be the Navy game. It's one of those things, like, it's like how I feel about the Penguins. Like, everything seems too good to be true on paper, so right. Something's going to F it up. Something's going to just screw everything up. And I just get the feeling with this, like, this is going to happen. And but, I mean, you know, we did exactly what we were supposed to do against Youngstown State.
Right.
They still have never scored a touchdown against a FBS.
I'm glad we weren't the team to... have that streak stamp.
If we're going to be playing FCS teams, we got to find better ones in Youngstown State.
Delaware's and
awful.
Play Villanova, they'd be Temple.
Yeah, finally, yeah, we'll play Villanova and then drag them into the Big East. Jay Wright will be their head coach.
Nice.
With a slick back.
I hate that guy.
Too good looking to be that age. Too good looking of a guy. No, it's untrustworthy. He's like that guy in Mad Men, Roger Sterling. He's too handsome to be that age. He's too handsome. You gotta start to decay when you get that old, man. You can't have movie star looks in your late 40s. Makes it, like, only dude that's allowed to have that is George Clooney. George Clooony looks exactly the same as he did when he was, like,
yeah. 20, he definitely 25. Sold his soul to the devil.
He's got the way to go, man. Like, he doesn't do stupid stuff like date actresses. He's, like, dating, like, cocktail waitresses and stuff. And all, like, 21.
He's getting married.
He's like 49. He's got it made, man. George Clooney lives the life, making those Ocean's 11 movies. Him and Matt Damon hanging out. But Matt Damon's a good guy. He always seems like a good guy on TV. I bet he's fun to hang out with.
I read a couple interviews about him when I was on planes and stuff, and very, very private guy, which I can respect.
Yeah. He doesn't do stupid stuff either. Like, he doesn't do, like, goofy stuff.
Right.
Like, I understand where Brad Pitt's coming from with Angelina Jolie. I understand. What are you gonna do? You're Brad Pitt. No, what are you gonna do? You gotta go.
I take Jennifer Aniston 10 times.
Ugh, out of 10. I disagree. Although Jennifer Aniston's not bad looking.
No, Angelina Jolie's got those gross big lips and those gross tattoos all over her body.
She does have tattoos.
I don't like
you remember
that.
When Steve-O got Billy Bob tattooed on his arm like she had? That guy knows comedy. And doing drugs. Well, not doing drugs anymore, but used to be.
Having people think he doesn't do drugs anymore. Let's be honest.
I saw that, the Fall of Steve-O show on MTV2.
You know, the Fall of Bam?
Yeah, he's like a drug addict now. That sucks.
Dunk's I need got, my funny TV
Dunk's
shows.
Got Lyme disease.
Just get when you pet a deer.
like Rap himself. Is like
doesn't talk to anybody. Came to Pittsburgh.
Deco's an extra in The Wrestler. I watched The Wrestler again just because, like, I enjoy how hilarious that movie
just
is.
Just the bad second time around.
Oh, it's just as bad. I don't know how that movie got so much hype on
it. That awful Bruce Springsteen movie at the end.
You mean the Bruce Springsteen song?
Yeah.
You ever seen a one-legged dog?
One-trick pony in your life.
You seen me, you seen me. God, that song sucks. He should have played that at the Super Bowl. How great would that have been? Like he's like, all right, we're going in the glory days, and then I'm playing the song about the one legged dog. Bring everybody in the Super Bowl down to screeching off.
Like, hey, remember that interception Harrison just ran back?
I'm gonna make
y'all sad.
Cardinals fans like, man, Bruce Springsteen doesn't have any humor.
Well, I think that's all for us, folks. A nice little way to wrap it up with some Bruce Springsteen talk and Brad Pitt. But
I think that song is The Wrestler. I think it's called The Wrestler. God,
I hate The Boss so much.
We're going to do Glory Days, and then I'm going to sing that song about from the movie Philadelphia about catching AIDS.
No, Tom Hanks got the AIDS.
Yeah. Okay. But there was a song, Streets of Philadelphia. It's like it was about catching AIDS. You should have just went like super high face, and it's just done the like. Remember the one time they had the dude from no, it was like Timberlake. It was the year before Timberlake pulled Janet Jackson's knocker out. It was like Nelly, and Nelly was wearing that stupid Ravens.
It was a half shirt.
Yeah, it had half jersey. Ravens, yeah, half, but they made like all the kids like run the stage. They should have had him run the stage while he was playing the wrestler song. They get the stage. Oh,
they could have had all the old wrestlers, like bad gimmick wrestlers, run to the stage.
Like, oh my god, man! Oh my god, it's the goon.
It's a Brooklyn Brawler.
His boots look like hockey skates.
Oh, man. Well, that's it for us, folks. We'll be heading to Buffalo next week for the annual Cat Basket road trip. So look forward to Jason, myself, Grant, and JT. We'll hopefully do a podcast while up there. We're going to stay in Buffalo for a few days and enjoy the sights and sounds of upstate New York and see what they have to offer. We'll give you our report after the game. But in the meantime, enjoy the week. Enjoy the win. We got the Steelers coming back on Thursday. Penn's training camp coming up. But most importantly, Pitt football is now 1-0.
Yes.
So for Jason Jones, this is the one and only DPJ. Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop.